Vilina Kako. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to Indigenous Politics from Native New England and beyond. My name is J.K. Haolani Kawanui, and I'm your host. We're broadcasting here in Middletown, Connecticut, also known as Mattabesset, the traditional homeland of the Wangunk tribe. Today, I will be updating listeners on Native Hawaiian self-determination issues, which is my primary area of research. This multimedia talk show focuses on the struggles of Indigenous peoples and features news items, interviews with political leaders, community activists, cultural authorities, as well as scholars whose work addresses Indigenous politics. For those of you unfamiliar with some of these issues, Indigenous peoples are the original inhabitants of territories that have been colonized by settler societies, such as the United States, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and usually minorities in their own homeland. The terms used to identify Indigenous peoples vary depending on the colonial history and region, as well as the historical period. In the United States, Indigenous peoples include American Indians, made up of hundreds of tribal nations, Alaskan Natives, including Indians, Inuits, and Aleutians, and Native Hawaiians, as well as American Samoans and Chamorros from Guam and the Northern Marianas Islands. There are also Taino claims in Puerto Rico. Because American Indians were the original inhabitants of what is now considered the United States, they are recognized sovereigns. Indian nations are subject to the U.S. Trust Doctrine, which is supposed to be a unique legal relationship with the U.S. federal government that is supposed to entail protection. Stemming from the trust relationship, the U.S. asserts plenary power over tribal nations, which it claims as exclusive and preemptive. In the Pacific Islands, sovereign recognition has taken a different shape. The U.S. federal government has treated Native Hawaiians, also known as Kanaka Maoli, and other Native Pacific Islanders as Native Americans in many respects. For example, Congress has enacted numerous special provisions of law for the benefit of Native Hawaiians in the areas of health, education, labor, and housing. Along with American Indians and Alaskan Natives, Native Hawaiians have been included in over 160 federal acts for Native Americans since 1903. Although Native Hawaiians were included in legislative acts benefiting Native Americans, we have also been treated historically as so-called Asian Pacific Islanders under Directive 15 of the U.S. Office of Management and Budget, and therefore have a history of being treated administratively as though we are merely a racial minority without specific claims to sovereignty and the attendant political status that entails. While the federal directive changed in 1997 and created a new designation on the U.S. Census for, quote, Hawaiians and other Pacific Islanders, the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, has yet to standardize data collection throughout various administrative bodies. Nonetheless, to some degree then, the U.S. Congress recognized that a quote-unquote special relationship exists between the United States and the Native Hawaiian people when it extended some of the same rights and privileges accorded to American Indian, Alaska Native communities. Relevant legislation includes the Native American Programs Act of 1974, the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, the National Museum of the American Indian Act, the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, the National Historic Preservation Act, and the Native American Languages Act. Also, under Title VIII of the 1975 Native American Programs Act, Native Pacific Islanders are also defined as Native Americans, and that includes more than just Native Hawaiians, including American Samoans and Guam Chamorros. There are also several Hawaiian-specific federal acts comparable to those providing for American Indians and Alaskan Natives, such as the Native Hawaiian Health Care Act and the Native Hawaiian Education Act. In all of this legislation, Hawaiians are defined by a very inclusive definition, defined as, quote, any individual who is a descendant of the Aboriginal people who, prior to 1778, occupied and exercised sovereignty in the area that now constitutes the state of Hawaii, end quote. And so that, dear listeners, is kind of sets the groundwork and the framework for the information that I want to share with you today, having to do with the question of recognizing Native Hawaiian sovereignty and the politics of self-determination and how it differs under international law and under U.S. federal policy. So please stay tuned. I'm going to play another Hawaiian song here. This is definitely sovereignty oriented. This is the Big Island Conspiracy from their LP, Reflective But Unrepentant.
I was running by one quart load. I come back from fighting the wars just like my papa done my tutu done before me. Couldn't help feeling something been missing. I lost a good friend of mine. I figured that I'd been pimped by the greatest perpetrator in town. Chicken! Colonial thugs with their Bible and drugs. Snitches, dopers, religious interlopers. Mission to see secure. Kind of a eager native pure. Culture's trample, intellectual example. Righteousness brought. The European thought we couldn't touch it. If there's hell below, we don't go. Unrepentant pagans decline. Different climate, culture, color the soul. Tutu belly, the ancestor of mine. Quit your barking and your pounding the door. We don't do the dogs and the emo no more. Fanatical fools, theological lies. Charlotte, where the sun don't shine. But let it in. Don't do it. I pray they don't say my cut here they come. My mama will care a lot, Kanaka be done. Well, him guns thinking that our God's fraud. Cause we're chocolate with the gods in our chocolate backyard. So we're sitting here resisting disease. Don't dig them thugs, colonial squeeze couldn't touch it.
The funny way of a evil poke out.
Oh, he grows gone.
And I don't know how we are.
Liberating style.
From heaven sent, ripping off native is the way to repent. Knew her attitude is simply because too many lies for too many laws. New lands resolutions cover up the intrusion. Righteousness is not required. We imitate the lie, we couldn't touch it. If there's hell below, we don't go. Unrepentant pagans decline. Different climate, culture, color the soul. Tutu belly, ancestor of mine. With your barking and you pounding the door. We don't do the dogs and the emo no more. Fanatical fools, theological lies. Charlotte, when the sun don't shine, couldn't let me. We still recovering colonial discovering. Steal the soul of the man, you steal the life of the land. American sugar, pilgrim descendants. Broke the tribal laws of the only Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not steal. From peaceful friendly nations whose gods are real. Touch that.
Honey. of a pristine sea, oh Hawaii. Aina mai kapuana, kapuana la. Ha aheo kainoa o kawai. Kao mai ka leihali ai ike ia la. He lei pua uri o mano kalani po. Listen to the whispering wind of the island. Come and hear the voices of a pristine sea, oh Kauai, oh Kauai, oh Kauai.
And this is Indigenous Politics from Native New England and Beyond. I'm your host, Kei Haolani, and today I'm offering an overview and update of Native Hawaiian self-determination struggles. I just played another track by Sista Robi called Kauai Nani La. Love that track, and that's going out to my ohana, my family, who are from Kauai. On January 14th of this year, U.S. Senator Daniel Akaka, who's a Democrat representing Hawaii, reintroduced a legislation for a Native Hawaiian Reorganization Act, a bill that would recognize a Native Hawaiian governing entity along the lines of an American Indian tribal nation. This proposal has divided the Native Hawaiian community due to different goals of self-determination. Looking toward Native Hawaiian, also known as Kanaka Maoli, sovereignty politics, can offer insight into the changing nature of indigenous self-determination under U.S. domestic policy and the potentials for reforming international law to allow for the full self-determination of indigenous peoples. Kanaka Maoli have been searching for models of self-governance by turning to peoples around the globe for a better understanding of exercising sovereignty and self-determination. Hawaiian points of comparison go beyond comparisons with tribal sovereignty in the United States. They extend to other colonized peoples of the United States and beyond. For example, Hawaiians look to Palestine, East Timor, Aotearoa, also known as New Zealand, the Cook Islands, Tokelau, as well as those peoples who have decolonized from the United States, the Philippines, the Republic of the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, and the Republic of Palau. Other sites for comparative study and solidarity include the U.S. territories of the Pacific and the Caribbean, Guam, American Samoa, the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas Islands, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. All of these examples reveal gradations of self-determination and recognized sovereign or semi-sovereign status. The history of the Kingdom of Hawaii, recognized by all major global powers throughout the 19th century, provide Kanaka Maoli, Hawaiians, with a legal genealogy that makes the current state-driven push for federal recognition, as reflected in the Akaka bill currently before Congress, very problematic. The United States and members of the international community also recognize the kingdom's independence through treaty relations with the major powers of the world, including not only the United States, who signed five different treaties of friendship, commerce, and navigation with the Hawaiian Kingdom, none of which had to do with any land cessions or governance. But the kingdom also had treaties of friendship and diplomatic recognition with Austria-Hungary, 1875, Belgium, 1862, Denmark, 1846, France in 1846 and again reaffirmed in 1857, Germany in 1879, Great Britain in 1836, 1846, and 1851, Italy 1863, Japan 1871 and 1876, the Netherlands 1862, Portugal 1882, Russia 1869, Samoa 1887, Spain 1863, the Swiss Confederation 1864, and both Sweden and Norway 1852. These treaties serve as legal precedents, which include recognition as an independent nation-state when the kingdom was brought into the family of nations in 1842. And yet, it is clear that Native Hawaiians, like American Indians, have also been subject to 20th century U.S. policies, both positive and negative, with regard to indigenous peoples. A series of critical historical events provide the basis for understanding the dual claim for Hawaiian self-determination under both the federal recognition model under U.S. policy, as well as full independence under international law. In 1893, U.S. Minister of Foreign Affairs John L. Stevens, with the support of a dozen white settlers, organized to overthrow the Hawaiian monarch, Queen Liliuokalani. She yielded her authority under protest because she was confident that the United States government would endeavor to undo the actions led by one of its ministers, acting in an unauthorized way and in an unlawful way. Eventually, after sending an investigator on the matter, U.S. President Grover Cleveland declared the action under Stevens an act of war and acknowledged that the coup backed by U.S. Marines was unlawful. However, Cleveland was out of office before he could restore formal recognition to the Queen. Those who orchestrated the overthrow formed the provisional government that was established later as the Republic of Hawaii on July 4th, 1894, with Sanford B. Dole as president. Besides asserting jurisdiction over the entire island archipelago, this group seized roughly 1.8 million acres of lands, known as the Kingdom, Crown, and Government lands, and later ceded the same land base to the United States when the U.S. illegally annexed Hawaii in 1898. The U.S. did not annex the Hawaiian Islands by treaty. Rather, it purportedly annexed the archipelago through its own internal domestic law, the Newlands Resolution, in 1898. Despite massive indigenous opposition that Kanaka Maoli, Native Hawaiians, demonstrated the year prior, in 1897, when three key nationalist groups submitted two monster petitions that successfully defeated a proposed treaty of annexation under President McKinley. Despite that opposition, pro-annexationists proposed a joint Senate resolution, even though to admit Hawaii this way as a new territory and not as a state, like Texas, for example, even though it violated the U.S. Constitution. With a joint Senate resolution, all that was needed was a simple majority in both houses of Congress, unlike a treaty of annexation, which needed two-thirds majority vote in the Senate. And so that is another segment of that history. And I'm going to turn now to another song, and I will return to talk about some of the more contemporary issues going on around these issues. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Indigenous Politics from Native New England and beyond.
Peaceful is Makoa in the evening. Above us all the hoku shining bright. Once we're here we never feel like leaving. To return to Honolulu city life. So we stay here in Makua, where life mountains, the valley, and the ocean make us realize where we wanna be. White sands and blue waters say good morning as we watch the night a swim so playfully. They've come with the whales to greet us at the dawning of another sunny day for you and me. We lay our net at the setting of the sun to find it full of ea when the morning comes. With the uwa koko over us in Makua, for this whole island na mahalo e ke akua. Makua, our aina, the land that belongs to you and me. It's the puhonua for the kua aina, a place where we Hawaiians can still be free. So we stay,
oh, we stay. In Makua,
where life is simple and free. The mountains, the valley, and the ocean make us realize where we wanna be. On another sunny day for you and me.
People realize that diabetes is responsible for 87,000 lower limb amputations each year, most of which could have been prevented with early detection. If you've been diagnosed with diabetes or suspect that you are at risk, see a podiatrist and check your feet daily for slow healing cuts and sores and swelling and redness and numbness. Remember, when it comes to diabetes, it's what you don't feel that can hurt you. Message from WESU Middletown.
All right. You're listening to Indigenous Politics from Native New England and Beyond. My name is Kehaulani and I'm your host. I want to make sure that listeners out there have access to my email. I welcome your feedback on this program. My name is spelled Kehaulani. That's N-I-N as in Nancy. At WESU-FM. FM as in FM radio. .org. Again, that's Kehaulani at WESUFM.org. Before the public service announcement, I played another track by Sister Robi called Makua. And I've been featuring two bands on this program today, Big Island Conspiracy and Sister Robi. And I thought Makua was especially fitting because the U.S. Army in Hawaii just released two environmental impact statements to the public for their consideration because the Army wants to resume live fire training in Makua Valley. And that for us Hawaiians is a sacred site. Makua Valley is a stunning, beautiful place, and it's on the Waianae side of Oahu Island, about 40 minutes out from Honolulu, which is a very rural place, a very Hawaiian place, There are four different Native Hawaiian homestead communities out there on that side of the island. And Makua itself, the word means parent. And that name of the valley absolutely marks our kinship to the land. And I don't mean that in a metaphorical way. I mean that in terms of literal kinship system. So for those of you interested in following up on that issue, you can tune into online. You can go to the Honolulu Advertiser or the Honolulu Star Bulletin and read about what the military is trying to do to destroy Makua Valley. Now, I want to return to the focus on Native Hawaiian self-determination and some of the legal issues. In 1993, the U.S. Congress issued an apology resolution known as Public Law 103-150 in a joint Senate resolution signed into law by President Bill Clinton to the Hawaiian people for the U.S. military's role in the overthrow. Although the apology includes a disclaimer at its very end, stating that nothing contained can be used to settle a case against the U.S., this law is still a finding of fact, which includes some very strong admissions of guilt and an affirmation of Hawaiian sovereignty. The apology maintains, quote, "The indigenous Hawaiian people never directly relinquished their claims to their inherent sovereignty as a people or over their national lands to the United States, either through their monarchy or through a plebiscite or referendum," end quote. And that is really a loaded admission. Notice it says that the Hawaiian people never directly relinquished their claims. So that suggests that the U.S. recognizes that our claims are still outstanding. They've never been relinquished. We still hold those rights. That phrasing also specifically says inherent sovereignty, which means that we hold it and it's not derivative. It's inherent. It's not gained or derived from any other governing body except ourselves as the Hawaiian people. Also important in this admission is the fact that they say Hawaiians as a people. As a people is a really important turn of phrase legally under international law, because to be a people or to talk about indigenous peoples with an S on the end denotes rights under international law for collectives. Another way to think about it is the difference between saying indigenous group or indigenous nation. To say indigenous people is like saying indigenous nation, because any group of people can be a group or an organization or a population, and that doesn't necessarily connote sovereignty rights. Whereas a people, that phrasing under international law, comes with certain rights, or is supposed to. Also notice that admission says national lands. It doesn't say indigenous lands or native lands. It says national lands, which is very important. They're speaking there about the 1.8 million acres of former Kingdom, Crown, and Government lands that the Republic of Hawaii, under Dole, ceded to the U.S. federal government. If that had said native lands or indigenous lands, that would be subject to, there wouldn't be the full recognition of unlimited sovereignty, because under the U.S. doctrine of discovery, the U.S. says that indigenous land title, they regard it as lesser than, unfortunately, in terms of the U.S. Supreme Court legal precedents. And the next part of that phrase that I want to just highlight is that this apology is saying that Hawaiians never relinquished the inherent sovereignty as a people or over the national lands to the United States, either through the monarchy or through a plebiscite or referendum. And that is pointing to the monarch not relinquishing through the monarchy. In other words, the actions of the Queen's yielding authority under protest did not amount to any termination of Hawaiian sovereignty claims, nor did the overthrow itself. And the plebiscite or referendum, that's pointing to statehood in 1959. And that right there is affirming that statehood with the United States did not work to extinguish or cede Hawaiian sovereignty that's inherent as a people. Now, because Hawaii was on the list of non-self-governing territories after World War II, when the countries around the world had to report their colonies to the United Nations, because of that fact and the U.S. apology resolution that supports activists' assertions, that the exercise of the statehood vote in 1959 did not violate our sovereignty claims to nationhood or national lands. That amounts to Hawaiians having a legal genealogy and indeed a paper trail that is undeniable. And that legacy, that genealogy, is what's at stake right now in this federal proposal that U.S. Senator Daniel Akaka has reintroduced last month in the new 110th Congress. There are several contemporary conditions that serve as rationales for his proposal regarding the federal recognition of Native Hawaiians as a governing entity. And again, like I've said earlier, that would be along the lines of a tribal nation. For one, in 2000, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a case called Rice v. Cayetano. In the Rice case, the court held in favor of a man named Harold F. Rice, who was a fourth-generation white resident of Hawaii, who was denied the right to vote in Hawaiian-only elections for the trustees of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs. Rice was turned away because, identifying as a white American, he is not Native Hawaiian by any statutory definition. Since the office's inception in 1978, trustee elections have been limited to residents of Hawaii who are of Hawaiian ancestry, that is, Aboriginal Polynesians. The U.S. Supreme Court's majority opinion decreed that the state's electoral restriction that was limited to Native Hawaiians enacted what they called race-based voting qualifications and therefore violated the 15th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and its guarantee that the rights of citizens to vote, quote, shall not be denied or abridged on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude, end quote. Although the majority opinion in Rice v. Cayetano opined by the U.S. Supreme Court, did not rule on the question of the 14th Amendment, which Rice had pushed. He said that the Hawaiian-only voting provisions violated not only his 15th Amendment, but also the 14th Amendment, which provides for equal protection. The court did not touch the 14th Amendment question, and so did not affect the actual trust that the Office of Hawaiian Affairs is meant to manage. However, there are many more lawsuits in motion to try and dismantle the Office of Hawaiian Affairs using the 14th Amendment issue. These legal cases that have all come down the track since 2000 threaten the very existence of all Native Hawaiian-specific funding sources and institutions based on plaintiffs' charges that they are unconstitutional and racially discriminatory against non-Hawaiians and so violate the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. These laws call into question the very existence of the Office of Hawaiian Affairs, all federal funds for Native Hawaiian health, education, and housing, the State Department of Hawaiian Homelands, and the lands they manage based on the 1920 Hawaiian Homes Commission Act, which is also being challenged. Within this context of legal assaults, many Native Hawaiians, Kanaka Maoli, and their allies support Senator Akaka's proposal for federal recognition, because it is understood as a protective measure against these lawsuits. In March 2000, just 1 month after the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Rice, Hawaii's congressional delegation formed a task force on Native Hawaiian issues, chaired by Senator Akaka. As its immediate goal, the task force aimed to clarify the political relationship between Hawaiians and the United States through the U.S. Congress. Federal recognition would redefine Kanaka Maoli as a political entity, so challenges of quote-unquote racial distinctions would be moot in terms of equal protection under the U.S. Constitution. The proposal is modeled on the recognition of over 300 federally recognized American Indian nations, but it seems more likely that this limited proposal would pave the way for the sort of arrangement had by over 200 Alaska Native villages, in addition to the fiscal settlement that would extinguish sovereignty rights. Senator Akaka introduced this federal proposal for Hawaiians in 2000 during the 106th Congress, where it did not survive committee. After major revision, the bill was next reintroduced in the 107th Congress, but also did not pass due to Republican opposition. Again, during the 108th Congress, the proposal reemerged, but conservative forces in the Senate continued to refuse to support the measure, especially since the Bush administration had yet to take a position on it. In the 109th Congress, the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs held a full hearing on the legislation, but did not manage to get a full Senate vote on the matter. This bill has served as a political wedge by conservatives with opposition in the Senate, where Republicans have consistently condemned the bill on the basis that it gives Hawaiians, quote, special rights or constitutes racial privileges. Now that we are in the 110th Congress that just opened last month, time will tell what will come of this legislation, especially given the new Democratic majority. And to many Hawaiians, that looks like a positive development because under Democratic leadership, this legislation actually has a chance of passing into law, and that would be the Native Hawaiian Reorganization Act of 2007. However, not everybody's happy about this development. There is a fraught division in our Hawaiian sovereignty movement between those fighting for federal recognition as a protective measure for Kanaka Maoli, Native Hawaiians, since the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in 2000, and those who want nothing less than full independence from the United States based on international laws of de-occupation and or decolonization, which are two different legal strategies under the United Nations, under international law, for international nation-state recognition. There are other reasons why those who support independence oppose federal recognition. At the very most, a new internal self-governing model brought about through the U.S. federal recognition process would allow for no more than a domestic dependent entity under the full and exclusive plenary power of the U.S. Congress. Federal protection is now being sold to Native Hawaiians as a defense against average non-Hawaiian citizens who challenge the same trusts that the United States never held up in the first place, a trust that itself is based on the theft of our nation. While U.S. federal policy on Native Americans states that the federal government must consult with tribal governments regarding decisions about tribal lands, resources, and people to honor the government-to-government relationship, the U.S. Congress has a long history of abusing its plenary power to subordinate tribal governments. Even worse, the U.S. Congress most often delegates its executive power to the Bureau of Indian Affairs within the Department of the Interior, which is directed by presidential appointees. Similarly, in 2004, George W. Bush, signed into law, helped create the Federal Office of Hawaiian Affairs in Washington, D.C., which is also under the Department of the Interior, which sits right alongside the Bureau of Indian Affairs and also the Office of Insular Affairs, which manages and oversees issues in the Caribbean and Pacific U.S. territories. Supporters of federal recognition insist that nothing in the Akaka bill would compromise or foreclose Hawaii's national claims under international law. But what they do not attend to are the ways in which the U.S. asserts its plenary power to keep indigenous sovereigns, both domestic and dependent. Overall, Kanaka Maoli, who support federal recognition, argue that it is a first step towards gaining independence from the United States. But they rarely acknowledge the ways that federal recognition inherently, structurally, sets up a process for the extinguishment of all claims in exchange for that recognition. That is, once the bill sets up the process for the formation of a governing entity approved only by the U.S. federal government, the will of the people will look to have been expressed as a form of self-determination in support of federal recognition in a way that would make international intervention much more far-fetched. Nonetheless, as it stands now, Hawaiians have never relinquished national sovereignty, a fact that remains undisputed. And I should point out here to listeners that despite the division in the Hawaiian sovereignty movement between those wanting federal recognition and those wanting full independence, the sad and pathetic truth of the matter is that it won't be up to Hawaiians to decide. This decision will be made on Capitol Hill in the U.S. Senate, which is over 5,000 miles away from the Hawaiian Islands. And that does not constitute self-determination. If Hawaiians want a nation within a nation government and not independence, regardless of what model Hawaiians want, there needs to be a process where Hawaiians can exercise that decision and make a freely informed consensual decision. And that would mean UN oversight and have a vote to see what people really want, and set it up so that if people really choose nation within a nation status, at least it will have been their own decision and their own choice in the matter. Now, I will return momentarily with some recent political updates, but I want to turn to another song by Big Island Conspiracy. I just can't help myself. This one is called Willie Bright. Check it out.
He comes from the house of Vina.
Let the blood in.
Kapuka vehi kona mama south.
She wonders where he been. Said he been to the house of a foreign design. Them here lost his connect of mine. Said he know now that justice is blind.
We the evidence.
Of foreign design, them near lost his connect of mine. Said you know now that justice is blind.
To this very day, he continues to look for the answer to the problem in the holy, holy book. Was it cosmic intervention or Anglo malice?
Recognize it was no shocking drive. The U.S. lost his ultimate life. No cosmic intervention was the Christian need for world domination.
We the evidence,
not the crime.
We are the evidence,
not the crime.
We are the evidence,
not the crime. Have you heard?
We are the evidence.
Recognize it was no shocking jive. U.S. forces on a native line. No cosmic intervention was a Christian need for world domination.
Me, I from the house of Ina, will resist with the strength of the elders gone. Holding to the promise of the children to come and
greet each morning. Connect our sons and daughters.
I really think you ought to get off your ducks and holler.
Resist.
We the evidence,
not the crime.
We just the evidence,
not the crime. That's right.
We just the evidence,
not the crime. Have you heard?
We just the evidence,
not the crime.
Sons and daughters. I really think you ought to get off your duffs and holler.
Resist.
Yes, that's Big Island Conspiracy doing Willie Bright. My name is Kehaulani, and this is Indigenous Politics from Native New England and Beyond. And I've been addressing matters today having to do with Native Hawaiian self-determination and the distinctions between exercising self-determination under U.S. federal policy versus under international law. And I want to leave you in closing here with some political updates. Besides the fact that U.S. Senator Daniel Akaka resubmitted that federal legislation proposal on Native Hawaiian federal recognition last month, also this month, earlier on February 13th, a Native Hawaiian housing amendment failed in the Financial Services Committee of the Senate due to racially motivated opposition. This came a week after Republican policymakers also opposed the American Indian Health Care Improvement Act on grounds that it was supposedly race-based. As my mother put it, the conservatives are hanging on to the dry bone as they try to deny the First Nations of this land their rights, and while they refuse to uphold the U.S. trust obligation and the government-to-government relationship grounded in treaty rights, the U.S. Constitution, and U.S. federal law. And I want to leave you with my email. My name is Kehaulani, and you can email me at kehaulani at wesufm.org. I would welcome feedback on this new program. Aloha and thank you for listening.